Cape Talk, fabulous life.
Well, if 2017 was the year of the gin revolution, our question now is, what does 2018 hold in store for the cocktail connoisseurs? I'll give you a couple of clues in a moment, but just to say, for those of you who don't drink for whatever reason, just a note that I know today is focused on alcohol. Next week, we're going to be focusing on trends in non-alcoholic drinks. And we had a conversation around this approximately a year ago, and I want to say a big thank you. Several of you that day sent us an SMS about a product called the Dutch Virgin Gin and Tonic, and it's become an absolute favorite of mine. It's always in my fridge. Thank you for the suggestion, and we're going to talk to the Duchess next week to find out how their brand has grown and how the trend of non-alcoholic drinks is expanding, thankfully, in this country. For now, though, let's take a look at what's going into the cocktail shaker for the year ahead, and I'm going to give you clues, because there are actually two kinds of liquor competing to make a big splash this year, if you believe the trend forecasters. One of them is made from a succulent, and pairs well with lemon and salt. The other is the stuff that pirates dream of. I'm talking, of course, about tequila and rum. Joining me on the line is Rowan Liebrandt, who's the co-founder of fine liquor merchants Truman and Orange. They represent a number of different high-end and craft alcohol brands in South Africa. And perhaps most pertinently to today's conversation, they represent Fortaleza Tequila and Spytail Rum. Rowan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, it's a tricky time of year to be talking about booze, isn't it? A lot of people are deciding that they're going to have a little bit of a break. So let's see.
Yeah, I know a lot of people go for a dry January, and all credit to them. Some of us are just feeling that we are all celebrated out after the festive season. But nevertheless, January is a good time to talk trends. And I'm interested to know sort of what drives trends in alcohol. I mean, do we know what makes gin suddenly explode like it did last year and tequila and rum bubble up as they're doing this year? What do you look for in forecasting trends?
I mean, South Africa is such an interesting market. You know, we now, with the last 20 years, we've increasingly become part of the global community. But ultimately, we're still really far, just physically, geographically far from places. So you tend to find, or what I tend to find is, these interesting trends start to bubble up in places like London and New York. And then kind of in the decade or so to follow, you start to find them in places like Joburg and Sao Paulo and Hong Kong, kind of all around the world. So. Mm-hmm. To some extent, we kind of following what's happening in these world, in these kind of global mega cities. I mean, that isn't entirely true, but it's kind of sort of true enough, and it's certainly been the case for gin. You know, gin was ultimately a British drink, and it kind of followed the British Empire around the world. But then for the kind of longest period, it became the drink that my grandmother drank, and it's now become sort of the drink that my girlfriend drinks. You know, it's kind of been absolutely flipped on its head in the last 10 years.
Okay, now gin obviously had its big year here in South Africa last year with a noticeable increase in the number of craft gins. And of course, we've seen craft beer doing big things in the last couple of years. It seems to me, as somebody who doesn't know an awful lot about this stuff, that it almost looks like there's a bit of a pushback, Rowan, against the mass market, the big brands that have been there for decades, about not wanting to drink the same brand that our parents drank, for example, and rather looking for something a little bit different. Is it just a hipster thing? What is the craft drink movement all about?
We've based our whole business on this, so I hope it isn't just a couple of Cape Town hipsters. But it does seem to, there's an international need for, you know, the world in South Africa is just a much more sophisticated place than it was 10, 20 years ago. And people increasingly want to know where their products are from. They're interested in the stories behind them. They're keen to have some sort of authenticity in their products. They're not really interested in something running off a factory line at a million bottles a minute. They're much more interested in, you know, whoa, this is a little family has made this gin or this beer or whatever the case is. So to the extent that there's a pushback, I don't necessarily think it's an intergenerational thing, but more just people demanding increasingly interesting products and products that they kind of know where they've come from. I mean, we've got a gin called Melfi Gin, which is from Italy. And I mean, a couple of years ago, if I told you Italian gin, you would have gone, what? Really? It's a British colonial product. But, you know, we're seeing gins from Italy. We're seeing interesting gins from the States, from all over the world. And really, people are saying, we don't really care where they're from, but I'm really interested in the story. Tell me what's special and unique, and I'm going to sit and talk about it when I'm enjoying it.
Mm. Interesting. Okay, now you've mentioned that rum and tequila in particular seem to be the kind of next big thing for 2018. And I'm intrigued to talk about tequila in particular because I do understand that there is something of a fledgling growth of our own industry here in South Africa, growing agave plants in the Karoo and producing our own. I know of the La Leona brand from the Karoo region. I don't know how much it's grown as an industry here, Rowan. Do you have a sense of that?
So, unbelievably, South Africa is the world's fourth largest tequila market, which is kind of extraordinary.
Fourth largest.
And of course, for the last, you know, well, forever, really, it's been drunk by 20-year-olds kind of slamming it in bars. Now, for a long time, it was the party drink. And to some extent, I mean, it still is. It is, it's kind of quintessential party moment, isn't it? Out with friends and a kind of a celebratory thing where you all slam it. But as the rest of our choices and spirits have gotten more sophisticated, and of course we've got this, you know, in the South Africans now drink an enormous amount of cognac and single malt and all these kind of aged, you know, fantastic quality spirits. But as the quality of those spirits or at least people's taste in those spirits have climbed, what we've started to see in tequila is people starting to be really, really interested in sipping tequila. Tequila is a fascinating product because, you know, where things like cognac and whiskey are matured in barrels, so that they obviously make a new spirit at the distillation stage, and that goes into barrels, and then the barrel adds an enormous amount of flavor, you know, over the 10, 20 years that you decide to mature it. Tequila, they talk of the maturation happening in the plant. So the plant takes, it's something like 20 years, or might not be quite that long, but certainly 10 years to get to maturity. So the people who make tequila will tell you that, In a certain sense, the maturation kind of happens in the ground, and you get this enormous development of flavor in this maturing plant. But you're right, I don't quite know what the quirk of history was, but there were agave plants planted in the Karoo ages ago. I'm guessing somebody who wanted to kind of start a local industry, and then for whatever reason it didn't work. But the fascinating part is we've now got these kind of mature agave plants, which a couple of the local guys are sort of experimenting with. It's a very difficult product to get right. It's a challenging product because, to call it tequila, you need to be from a very specific area in Mexico.
Yep.
So one of the challenges they have is that they can make a delicious liquid, but then by the time you get to the shop, it might be merchandised in a different place or something because it doesn't necessarily go into the tequila section.
Right.
Which is a bit of a challenge. But, I mean, it's fascinating what's happening in tequila. We've gone from living in a world where people are drinking 200 rand tequilas. We've got a product called Fortaleza Tequila, which is between 700 and 1,000 bucks, depending on which one you're drinking. And we can't seem to keep up with the volume.
Really?
Which is another interesting part of tequila, actually. There's a real supply-side problem in that because of its increasing popularity internationally. You know, people 20 years ago didn't know how much tequila the world was going to be drinking now, so they weren't planting as much of it as we now understand that the world needs. Yeah, getting increasingly tricky to get your hands on the good stuff.
That's a fascinating story. So, yeah, you're sitting 20 years ago having to forecast how many plants to plant for a demand that could be who knows what in 20 years. It makes a lot of sense that you'd then pay that much for it.
Yeah, and the kind of people that are doing these are, you know, these are small Mexican artisanal farmers, a lot of them, and they are the ones having to really do the forecasting. You know, it's a tricky thing.
Now, just for the sake of those who are not familiar, whose only experience of tequila might have been a shot with some salt and lemon of the dodgiest possible kind, you actually get five different varieties, don't you?
Sure. Now, I knew you were going to ask me one of those questions that really test the kind of limits of my tequila knowledge. the kind of primary thing is to be aware of in tequilas. You get tequila, which is obviously the agave plant, which is grown in a very specific part of Mexico. You then get another type of agave spirit from Mexico called mezcal, which is made a slightly different way, which has got a more smoky flavor because of the way that they make it, and that's from a slightly different area in Mexico. Then the kind of important things for somebody to think about when they're standing in front of a shelf and wanting to try one of these, you know, fabulously premium tequilas is you get three types of aging, as it were. So you get blanco, which means white, and that's unaged. You then get reposado, which in Spanish means rested, so that might be a couple of months old. And you then get añejo, which is aged, which has gone into an oak barrel, which is aged. And the interesting thing, the fascinating thing about tequila is that if you take Scotch whiskey, for example, and you put it into a barrel and you then age it to 40 years, you've got a continuum of oaking flavor. So you get lovely vanilla-rich sort of flavors which develop over the 40 years. When you take tequila, what the tequila aficionados will tell you is that tequila blanco, so for example, the Fortaleza Blanco, which we do, is a big, rich, agricultural, sort of wet earth style flavor. You get a lot of the agave flavor coming through, and a lot of the tequila drinkers will tell you, well, that's what I want to drink. That's what tequila should taste like. I actually don't want that to be aged in oak. And then if, you know, that style of tequila, which has then been aged in oak, basically what happens, you get a softening and a more gentling of it, and you get some of the more vanilla flavors come through. It kind of becomes something else. It starts to taste a little bit like aged bourbon. So it's not one of those things that necessarily the younger stuff is better or worse than the older stuff. It's actually a different thing. And the real tequila purist will tell you, you know, Blanco is the one to head for. That's where you get a kind of full bite of the agave plant.
Fascinating stuff. For those who might have just tuned in and be wondering who you're listening to, my guest is Rowan Leibrandt, who's the co-founder of fine liquor merchants Truman and Orange, talking to us about alcohol trends for the year ahead and about the emergence of tequila and rum as the next big thing. Some of you might think they've always been the next big thing. If you've got a question about them, or if you want to share with us your favorite kind, perhaps you've been lucky enough to travel and try something really top end and completely extraordinary. Maybe you've had the opportunity to go to Mexico and see the plants growing there, anything like that, you're welcome to call us on 021-446-0567 or leave us a voice note on 072-567-1567, which this listener has just done.
Hi, Pippa. This is a great subject on alcohol trends. I have a really interesting, if it's a liqueur, creamy liqueur, that I tasted this holiday. And at first, I was a bit skeptical. I was like, oh my hat, what have South Africans produced now? But this brand is called Tansanise Malttaart. And I promise you, I had one shot, and I'm not really too into creamy liqueurs, but one shot just led to about 10 shots and led to bottles. When it's cold, it was just like one of the most refreshing, interesting shots I've ever had. And the brand around it was also, I had such a laugh. I think it was incredibly devised, and I just had to share that. It was something I experienced this holiday.
Well, thanks for sharing. Tansanise Malttaart in a bottle. In the name of research alone, I'm going to have to go and look it up. I'm not a fan of cream liqueurs, but Rowan, have you ever encountered Tansanise Malttaart?
I think I might. I haven't tasted it, to be fair, but I think I might have seen it. But actually, just something which your listener said there, which I think is really unfair sometimes. They say things, you know, people say things like, you know, it's made in South Africa, and you know, it's kind of being slightly apologetic about that. Maybe I'm sure that wasn't his intention, but, you know, something that people often forget is South Africa, you know, we've been distilling brandy for, you know, 250 years. I mean, we've got an extraordinary rich distilling history in South Africa. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, when South African businesses put their mind to it, they can make absolutely world competing products very easily with all this kind of amazing distilling tradition we've got. So it doesn't surprise me that he enjoyed Tansanise Malttaart. I'm sure it's very well made.
Okay. And he tapped into something you said earlier there, which is about this, the craft movement, the need for something authentic and the story behind the brand. There's a great example that he's just mentioned. Zuki has just WhatsApped up saying, I've tried Tansanise Malttaart and I agree, it is awesome. Okay, now I'm intrigued. I've got to go and find some. If anybody knows where you can find it, please let us know. Rowan, we've spoken a lot about tequila, and I do want to talk a little bit about rum. But just before we leave the tequila, Mark has emailed me saying, did you know that George Clooney made a tequila and has just sold it for $1 billion? Do you know anything about George Clooney's brand?
Yes, I do. I'm going to get the name wrong. I think it's called Three Amigos. If I kind of remember the story correctly, him and two or three mates started, and it was bought by Diageo. I think if I don't have the story wrong, it was kind of a drinks giant. And yeah, he made himself an absolute fortune. I don't think Mr. Clooney needs it, but good luck to him.
Well, maybe his wife can spend it fighting some good important law cases on the side if she needs any help. Okay, now, before we run out of time, we must talk about the rum as well, because besides the emergence of tequila, the other one flagged to be the next big thing this year is rum. And of course, this is a tradition that goes back to the West Indies, the days of Jamaica and Barbados and Brazil originally producing rum, which then traveled the world. Is there a particular, again, like tequila, there are lots of different varieties. You get your light rums, you get your golden, your dark, your spiced. Rowan, is there a particular kind that is about to have its big moment in the spotlight?
Yeah, so rum has kind of been sort of ticking away internationally. So in if you're in London, for example, the last 10 years, you've started to get the opening of interesting tiki bars, bars that are kind of experimenting with different ways of drinking rum. The kind of global rum story is that, you know, you had the French and the British effectively growing sugar in their Caribbean colonies, kind of in the Americas, and then distilling it on either side, on both sides of the Atlantic, actually. So both of those countries have got a kind of connection, sort of from left to right across the globe, as it were. And then you got the Spaniards and the Portuguese, who had colonies in Southeast Asia and in the kind of Pacific Islands. They had a relationship with places like the Philippines, so they were growing their sugar there, and they were distilling their rum there. So Europe's got this kind of left-right left-right relationship with their different colonies. So rum's got a really old history. And for me, the interesting thing about rum is its amazing flexibility. So what the special thing about rum is that you get this barrel maturation. So these are for the higher quality rums. You get this barrel maturation in these extraordinarily hot parts of the world, be it in the Philippines or be it in the Caribbean. So that maturation happens very, very quickly. You get this amazing buildup of flavor in sort of 2 or 3 years, which is why rum's got that, you know, well-made rum's got that lovely sort of pungent banana, sort of big, full, fat, sweet flavor. Whereas if you'd done that in Scotland, you know, in the much cooler climates of Scotland, it would have taken you, you know, decades to build up that kind of flavor, which happens really quickly in rum. So for me, rum is a really exciting product from that perspective, particularly living in a world now where, you know, people like those kind of more pungent, more opinionated flavor. Kind of delicate is out the windows nowadays. We want kind of big, opinionated flavors. I guess the thing that also has made rum quite interesting, especially in a place like South Africa, is that as people have gotten increasingly wealthy and sophisticated, you know, we drink more cognac and single malt, there's been a taste for aged spirits. So people have learned what a good cognac tastes like, what a good whiskey tastes like. And I think it's just rum's day. It's a fantastic product when it's well made, and it doesn't take too much imagination to see people enjoying, you know, and there are lots of South Africans that enjoy cognac and whiskey nowadays, to imagine some of them starting to sort of experiment with interesting aged rums.
Okay, we've got a question about rum on our SMS line, but before we get to that, Bridget has given us a call from Saldanha Bay with a question for you. Bridget, good afternoon.
Hello. I would like to know if the gentleman, I've got this bottle from Holland, from a friend, and it was in 1979, and it's called Aalborg. A-A-L-B-O-R-G.
Aalborg.
Does he know what it is?
Are you familiar with that at all, Rowan?
I'm not, unfortunately. Other than to say that, so spirits can typically keep quite long, but spirits don't continue to develop in the bottle as wine has done. So, you know, that bottle, if it's been kept kind of correctly, you know, Bridget, you can probably open it and try it, and it would have tasted like it was meant to the day it was bottled. So, I don't know if that helps you at all, but I'd strongly suggest you break it open and give it a try.
Yeah, it says it was made in 1946.
Oh, goodness.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah. Can I spell the other name for you?
Yes, please.
It's Y-U-B-I-L-O-E-U-M-S. And then at the bottom it says A-K-V-A-V-I-T.
Akvavit.
Akvavit.
Yes.
Yeah. So, God, I couldn't tell you exactly how Akvavit is made, but of course the Netherlands was famous for Geneva, which was kind of the precursor to gin. It wouldn't surprise me if the bottle that you've got there is a kind of a tall kind of coffin shape where the shoulders are sort of wider than the base. They famously used to put them in those types of bottles. Actually, I'll tell you an interesting side story. Is we do quite a bit of business in Lagos, Nigeria. And I was there recently in a market, and I saw a whole lot of these basically Akvavits and Geneva bottles. And on some of the dates, on some of the bottles, they had dates like, you know, 1800s and things like that. And apparently what was happening is these Dutch ships were coming on their way down to South Africa, and they were stopping in Lagos, and they were trading gin bottle or gin for various things. And that's how they'd found their way into the Lagos harbor. So who knows? You might have a sort of a... You might have a later generation of one of those bottles, possibly.
It sounds like you need to crack it open and enjoy it, Bridget. Thanks so much for your call. Predictably, I'm so glad, Justin, that somebody asked the question. Justin in Stellenbosch WhatsApping, taking us back to tequila. Could you please ask your guest just what is the function of the worm in the tequila bottle? Do you know the story, Rowan?
I do. I suspected to get you to pick the bottle up off the shelf and take it home. I've heard kind of various stories about how the Mexicans or the kind of Indians in that part of Mexico do use worms and things like that for certain kind of psychedelic properties and things like that. I don't know how they prepared, but I think that's the basic backstory, is that there is a worm which has certain psychedelic properties in that part of Mexico. That part of Mexico is famous for it. Putting in the bottle reminds people, you know, where that bottle's from, and maybe gives them the hope that they're going to get a bit more than tequila out of it.
At the very least, it's a marketing gimmick that works for them. Okay. Yunita SMSing to say, the best rum I've ever tasted was Methusalem rum made in Cuba. I was privileged to visit the country 2 years ago and bought a bottle, which I'm now sipping and savoring with friends. Lucky you. Ray on the SMS line asks, what can you mix with rum instead of Coke, which always makes me sick?
Ah, interesting. Well, of course, a lot of high quality rum nowadays can be drunk neat. So you would drink it on ice, as you would a good quality scotch or something like that. You might want to add a little bit of water, which would dilute the alcohol. So if you put 43% alcohol, you know, which is obviously most spirits in South Africa, if you put that into a glass, the 43% actually burns your mouth slightly. So, you know, adding a little bit of water and bringing it down to sort of 37 or 36, but still kind of keeping it cool so you don't get, you know, all this kind of explosion of young flavor. Just knocking the alcohol back a little bit normally allows you to taste it, allows you to effectively enjoy it past the alcohol. So I would recommend, if you like the flavor of rum but can't kind of get your head around adding Coke to it or something like that, absolutely, it can be drunk neat, just like scotch or cognac can be.
Okay. Rowan, last thing before we let you go. Susie has just emailed. She heard me mention that you represent the tequila brand Fortaleza, and you mentioned that some of the top-end bottles go for up to 1,000 rand a bottle. Susie's saying the reason they cost that much is the bottle itself. You must ask your guest about the bottle. What's so special about the Fortaleza bottle?
I love coming across people like this who know our products so well. So initially, when tequila used to be made, two hundred years ago, they were made in these little very inaccessible, you know, villages and kind of these inland spots in Mexico where communication wasn't so good, where the roads weren't so great. So typically everything happened in the village. So you would get people making bottles, hand making labels, hand making crates to put them in. But it would all need to happen in the village because of how remote these places were and how undeveloped that part of Mexico was, or to some extent still is. Of course, as the world has gotten to where we are now, you know, now people use kind of commercially made bottles and all the rest of it. But the fascinating part about Fortaleza tequila is they've tried to really maintain those old sort of craftsman traditions. So the Fortaleza bottle is hand blown in tequila. So in this little village, it's handmade there. It's got Fortaleza has a stopper, which your listeners just kind of they have to sort of go online and have a look at it. It's got this beautiful stopper, which looks like an agave plant, which is a handmade stopper. The whole thing is done by hand. It's beautifully made. But Joe, Susie's quite right. It's an amazingly expensive thing to do because, as you can imagine, individually making each bottle is a very slow, laborious process. But it looks beautiful. The end result.
It really does. I've just done a quick Google and I'll share a pic on Twitter for our listeners. Rowan, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks so much for joining us today. And let's hope the trends you forecast do come to be in 2018. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Sure. Rowan Leibrandt is a co-founder of Truman and Orange, who are high-end liquor merchants. Truman and Orange, thanks for the input there. And a happy drinking of your tequila and rum in 2018. Let's get the latest Eyewitness News. It's just past 2 o'clock.